Planet Rock, this is Paul Anthony backstage at the Toron Arena, Krakow in Poland, ready for night number two, the sold-out show from the mighty Iron Maiden as the Legacy of the Beast tour continues. Don't forget, hitting UK shores this Tuesday, kicking off in Newcastle, followed by Belfast, Aberdeen, Manchester, Birmingham, and two nights in London at the O2 Arena. And after that amazing show last night, I'm very pleased to say, joining us, Mr. Bruce Dickinson. How are you?
I'm all right, actually. I've been in bed all morning recovering.
What an amazing show. I mean, we've chatted about the show. We've seen clips on YouTube. We've seen loads of teases about the show. But until you actually see it and hear it for yourself, you can't quite take in how amazing it is.
I hope so. I hope that's the case. I mean, certainly it's exceeded our expectations because, you know, we went, oh, well, this is going to be a pretty cool show because, you know, we got the Spitfire at the beginning and we've got various other things going right through it. And when I first saw the the Spitfire opening the show, I just saw it in a soundstage just on its own. I went, how are we going to top that? You know, because most bands would finish a show with something like that. And I'm thinking, where do we go during the show with that? And actually, I'm really pleased the way that it's been driven by the music. And then we put in the costume changes. Obviously, a lot of that's down to me trying to sort of weave a storyline, not a literal storyline, but a kind of a sort of a bit of a mythic sort of storyline through it to go with the songs. And then daft things like, you know, the flamethrower and things, which the whole show looks like it was all coordinated. I wish I could say that was true. I mean, a lot of things happened as a result of one thing happening, something else happens. You go, oh, wow, that works. Wow, that works. And certainly with respect to some of the things that I ended up wearing, I just got really lucky with finding a couple of things in when we were rehearsing in Paris. And it was a theatrical shop and they sold like basically everything from, you know, the Middle Ages through till the early 19th century. And it was like a steampunk treasure trove, you know. And I went in there and the guy had this like basically sort of Jekyll and Hyde thing with a coat, the coachman's jacket and like a top hat and this like weird Venetian mask. I went, that's it. And we were already thinking about using lights maybe embedded in my palms for Fear of the Dark, because you can do it with LEDs. They're powerful enough now that you could do something like that. Because I wanted to sort of reinvent one or two of the songs that we've been doing for Donkey's Years and make people look at them in slightly different ways. And as soon as I went to this shop, I went, yeah, that's Fear of the Dark. So instead of running around, we'll stay in one place. Then when we had the cross, which I had an idea of putting LEDs in a cross, we didn't even know it was going to work till Ian Day, our tour manager, actually made it in his garage. You know, a prop company wanted 10 grand to make it. He made it for 100 quid out of plywood and it works brilliantly, you know. So we did that. And then again, all kinds of things just evolved because one thing led to another. So when that LED thing worked really, really well, you figure out when you're going to use it. I thought I was going to use it through the whole song. I only use it twice. And one is to cover up something that's going on behind it. And then, of course, the flamethrower thing. And it never occurred to me that during Flight of Icarus, me wearing a flamethrower, I suddenly went, hang on a minute, by chance, what's Eddie wearing on the single cover? Da-da, a flamethrower. So it looks like it's all been thought out. If it has been, then it's all in my subconscious because it wasn't conscious. It was very reactive. And I think that's one of the reasons why it works so well. I mean, the bit at the end where I basically sort of like get blown up, that started about halfway through this last leg when, by accident, Keith let off a pyro and it was right underneath my arse. And he went, oh my God, are you all right? I went, all right. It was brilliant. I said, can we do that with a load of them? And basically, I just so you can just blow me up and chase me around the stage. And then at the end of it, when everything goes off, I said, well, actually, while we're at it, why don't we just make a big plunger like, you know, Wile E. Coyote? Why don't I just blow the stage up at the end? And because we did it and everybody went, that looks brilliant. I went, good. Well, we'll carry on then, you know, load them up. So things like that, it's organic. It grows. And the music, of course, is set in stone. So the music is sacrosanct and set in stone. But everything around it, inspired by it and even inspired by some of the props that we're using, suggest doing other things, you know.
Like you said, after, I think, the third song, when you did the main intro to the show, you're going to let the music and the stage do the talking. You did pretty much that because there's so much going on within the songs, within the show, within the production, and it just works so well.
Yeah, exactly. We were going to chat twice during the show, but on reflection, it does work brilliantly, just doing one before Klansman. And then after that, the intros to the songs say it all. So, you know, you don't need to have a chat before For the Greater Good of God. And the set is so dramatic when it changes and when things do happen that you can afford to let things die down almost to silence in a blackout. Because, I mean, for example, at Revelations, when that set, the church set, is revealed, I like I was saying, he said, I love it every night. There's like this, ooh, from the audience when they see it, you know, which is just, it's brilliant. You know, and it's great moment. I love that set, that particular set. It's one of my favourite bits.
The crowd last night were absolutely insane, and I'm guessing that's the same reaction you've been getting all the way through the tour.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair comment, you know. And the subsequent reaction afterwards on, you know, social media and traditional media and everything has been extraordinary. It really has been extraordinary. And of course, the big thing, it shouldn't be a new dimension for us, but unfortunately it is, which is the sound. And Pooch, our new sound engineer, is just in a league way above anything we've ever had in terms of sound. So now we really sound like we should have sounded for years. But hey, what can you do, you know?
I was going to say that. You beat me to it. I mean, the sound was immense. That is the best, without any shadow of a doubt, single-handedly the best sound I've heard. Because even though it was an arena, which is hard to get a good sound, it was just perfect on every level.
Well, he's brilliant, because the one thing that I was concerned about with a new sound engineer was whether or not we would be flexible enough, you know, ourselves on stage with our sound and all the racket we're making and things, to adapt to what he wanted. And actually, he never said a dicky bird. He just went, hey, you guys just do what you do and I'll do the rest. Which I went, really? He went, yeah, just leave me to it. You know, if I really, really, really need to request you, you know, bugger lugs over there, turn down a bit or something else like that, I will. I said, but just leave it, you know. So now we actually just do what we do, and everybody just tells us it sounds great.
And standing just behind him last night when he was working his magic, seeing him sitting there and moving so much in time to the music and so into what he was doing, it was a joy just to watch him getting so much out of it, as you guys were.
Yeah, well, he's a big fan. As well as being, you know, an incredibly professional and vastly knowledgeable sound engineer, he does happen to be a big fan. So he knows what it should sound like, because he's listened to all the records, and in his head he's go, yeah, I know that solo, that's where it should be there, and that should be there. And the bit that you want to listen to there is that bit that wants to come out of the music, you know. And sometimes people try and mix Maiden like it's just any other rock band, and we're not any other rock band. You know, there's never really been a band like us ever that combines so many different things all at the same time. You know, quiet acoustic bits, ridiculously aggressive, loud bits, you know, that are, you know, really up tempo, really driving, with loads and loads of complex drum fills, all of which are essential to understand the song and to go with it. And it's easy to just make it a confused sort of rat's nest. But what he does, he puts it together as a whole, which is the way it should be.
I mentioned to Steve yesterday, one of the magazines described it as the greatest show on earth. Now, when you're striving to better things in stage production all the time, and you come up with something like this, a show as spectacular as this, for a magazine to kind of go out and say that, that must be fulfilling for the band and everybody that's kind of designed the set and put it all together.
Yeah, well, we're very proud of everybody that's surrounding us, because everybody gives, you know, 110% above and beyond for this show, because we all know that the smallest detail can make a massive difference. And sometimes it's funny when things go a little bit awry, as they inevitably do from time to time. But everybody's determination to make it work and fix something. So if there's something's not quite right, you know, everybody goes away and they come up with a fix for it, you know. So, yeah, that's really, really good to see. I have to say, we have to be sort of relaxed, I think, at the moment, about the fact that this is by far and away the greatest show the Maiden have ever done, certainly stage show that we've ever done. And therefore, let's not think about what we do next. until we get done with this one. I don't want to even go there.
Well, as the saying goes, the possibilities are endless, and they always have been in the Maiden Camp. Bruce, as always, a pleasure catching up, mate. Enjoy the show tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you on UK shores Tuesday, Newcastle, followed, of course, by Belfast, Aberdeen, Manchester, Birmingham, and round things off in style with two nights at the O2 in London.
Yeah, brilliant. I just wish more people could buy a ticket. It's all sold out, isn't it? Just about. Wow.